kids, it's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Joining as usual, Cole. How are you doing?
I didn't die.
That is good.
It's a plus.
That is a plus.
I was almost not here today.
Okay, first, let's get out of the way that Chris Purnell and Tim are here as well, and then we'll get to your story.
Sweep that unimportant information under the rug.
Yeah. Party cast time. We got the party cast crew here. How's everyone doing?
Doing okay. How are you doing?
Yeah, you know, it's another day.
My withered husk still draws breath. As always.
Dramatic.
Chris, how are you?
See, that line really gets people when they ask me at work. You know, I work in a school and, like, people just, you know, fucking have automated hallway banter. Like, I'll say hi to them and they'll say, good, how are you? Like, they didn't want to know.
Yeah.
Well, that's my response is always like, I didn't ask you how you were doing. It's very indignant. Like, how dare you? How dare you tell me how you are when I didn't ask?
You fool.
Yeah.
So, Cole, you almost weren't here. What the hell happened?
Apparently, the county or the state one decided to send in cleanup crews to get at least a little bit of the debris off of the road from the ice storm that was 3 months ago.
Remember that?
Damn.
Just now?
Talked about it on this show.
Yeah.
You want me to get to it? I thought you were about to say we had another ice storm unseasonably. You're like, no, it's just that fucking slow.
Yeah, so they sent in some crews to clean up alongside the roads. And they sent this. Honestly, I don't know how they got this truck in this hauler in the first place. We have like a super narrow road. And even more narrow than the road itself is that there's a bridge at the bottom of the hill that you come down a hill. It curves around the hill and goes down to get into where we are, right?
Okay.
And then there's a little concrete bridge that goes across a great big ass creek. You can barely get one car across that thing. Somehow they got this big motherfucking dump truck size times three, massive ass truck with this huge bed on it for hauling away these logs. And then it was pulling another trailer with another big ass bed on it. I don't know how they got it down here. I wish I had been there to see it happen because I'm sure they had.
If only any of us knew what the hell that place looked like.
I know. Like, imagine the tiniest. Like, you ever seen a four wheeler road that darts off into a hillside? That's our road.
Gee.
Okay. We don't even have asphalt or blacktop or whatever you want to call it.
Yes.
We call it blacktop here.
Them fancy modern trappings that y'all's got.
It's true. The directions to my house include the phrase, when you run out of road, you are almost there. Okay.
Where we're going, we don't need roads.
Like, our road is a deer path. And somehow they got these big, massive ass trucks up here. So, those motherfuckers were flying way too fast up this tiny ass non-existent road. And they were loaded down. There were tree branches and pine toppings just all over the fucking place. And they went meow up the road.
They meowed like a cat?
Meow. Meow. No, cats go meow.
I mean, it depends on your cat.
Okay, I can't.
Northern cats sound like that, I'll say.
Listen here. I cannot. I cannot make a car sound because I am a female with a high-pitched voice. Anyway. But yeah, that motherfucker was flying and they hit the phone line and they ripped that motherfucker clean off the side of my house.
Jeez,
yeah. Sent it flying. It was in tatters on the side of the road. And I have to point out that if you've been listening to this show for any length of time, you will know that this is not the first time something like this has happened.
No. Nope.
A couple years ago, the school bus did the exact same fucking thing.
Yup.
Boy.
Wheels on the bus went, holy fuck.
Wheels on the bus went, holy fuck.
In both cases.
Holy fuck.
The people who hit the line didn't even slow down.
People with the line went, holy fuck. Wait.
it ripped the fascia board off the side of the house. Like, there was siding left in the yard. It was a mess. So, yeah, I spent all day without phone and internet. And a little fella comes out and he's like, they tell me I need to fix your line. I was like, yeah, did they tell you what happened to you? He said, no, I just assumed that a tree fell on it. I was like, okay.
I like how you gave this person a higher pitched voice than you.
Everybody has a higher pitched voice than me. Have you ever heard everybody else's voice? My voice is so deep. Come on. It is in my head. That's the funniest part.
I'm about to say, your voice is not deep.
I know. In my head, I was like 34 before I realized I had a high pitched voice, because in my head it sounds super deep, but everybody else is like, why do you sound like Minnie Mouse sucking on a crack balloon?
Well, how was everyone else's day?
No phone lines were ripped off my house. I guess that's good. That has happened before, also, just because a truck tried to go down my street and it shouldn't have. It's too big. Too big. That was a long time ago, though. So my utilities are secure.
Best utility story I have is my mom was moving in a house.
Your mom was moving in a house.
Yeah. And they had the internet guy there setting up the phone line, and he was stretching the line across the road, and a truck came and yanked it right out of his hand.
Oh, my God. Stretching the line.
Yeah.
Caramello.
Glad no one got hit by that wire, too. It was right in town. Gosh. Yeah. Boy. So, anyone else have any stories today, or should we just get to reviews?
I think this might be just for reviews for me. My stories are, I voted for.
Oh my God, wait, Purnell doesn't want to go on a tangent? Who are you? And what have you done with Purnell? Have you even played these games?
He's sick. The only thing I did was I voted for the school board chairman, despite not having any kids. So, there you go. That's go. Purnell's.
Involved in local government.
Yeah.
That's on the way. Man, I'm not going to get into
it's like zap, rah.
No, I'm not going to get into what transpired at the Board of Education meeting that I had to work last night. But
no, I want to know. So you can't just say that.
Follow me on Twitter because I've been talking about it.
Fabio, what the fuck, school board?
Stop Twitter. Listening to this podcast and go to Twitter.
Stop the
conversation.
You can do that whenever
you want. Why do you listen to this show? What are you doing with your life?
Go to Twitter, all of our individual Twitters, and read what we've been doing.
Yes.
Leave us alone.
Leave us alone forever.
Why are you stalking us?
I'm just saying, I spent the good part of my morning rehashing the events of last night with people, so I've talked about it a lot today. Though it wasn't a recording on a podcast. But
And what is your Twitter so people could check it out?
Oh, it's at Ecubizer. I mean, usually I get tagged in the posts when I do a review. It's the one that's like EKK.
Yeah.
Don't tag him this time.
EIZOR. Ecubizor, which is coincidentally the name of my wrestling finishing move.
Nice. So,
yeah.
What is your finishing move? What does
so
it entail?
It's like it's like a Texas cloverleaf, but the walls of Jericho.
Oh, so it's like the cloverleaf hold, but kneeling on his head.
Yeah.
Nice.
It sucks for the person that's down there.
I'm glad somebody understood what he was saying, because I thought we were being trolled.
Yeah. I don't know.
Him and I could just go on a wrestling tangent for 20 minutes and no one would know what we're talking about.
In a couple weeks.
Anyone who's playing video games should know what a finishing move is, though, just from games.
Yeah, but Texas Clover.
And Walls of Jericho, like, and Lion Tamer. Yeah. No one knows what that stuff is.
Of course we know what the Walls of Jericho is. It's a historical element, right?
Is it historical? Like, they sang at it until it fell. Like, that's mythology, right?
Probably. I just made that shit up.
Oh. That's all I remember about it, because
I was just thinking of Jericho, the TV show, and then I was like, wasn't the whole problem that they didn't have enough walls or something like that? I don't even remember that show anymore.
Where they're going, they don't need walls.
Remember that show, though? Like they canceled it, and a bunch of people sent a bunch of shit, and that
started...
What did
they send? I forget what it was.
I don't fucking... Was
they didn't
it
send walls.
I want to say it was... It was nuts or something.
I don't know.
Nuts and gum together at last.
Nuts and gum? What?
Oh, that's a Simpsons joke.
Oh, look at this guy saying weird things.
That's what I do. No, that's it was my, nuts. That's they literally my nuts. Entire life.
I didn't understand the wrestling reference, but the Simpsons reference I got right away.
Nice.
See, there we go. There we go. You guys have your wrestling chat. Chris and I'll have our Simpsons chat, and Colby have our holler chat.
Simpsons holler. Seasons 3 through 9.
Well, that works for me. I mean, I stopped at like 15, but I don't chat about more than like 10.
An increasingly smaller window of ability to understand Simpsons references.
Huh? I still keep saying one day I'm going to just sit down and brave the rest of the show and just see how it plays. Like, it can be like a freaking YouTube journey or some shit. Like, I'm going to watch the lost season. They're not really lost, but I didn't want to find them. So there you go. But now's the time.
So you're just going to watch a TV show and...
Hey, you wow. say that as if people aren't getting paid to open fucking boxes on the internet.
Very true. Very true.
People do some ridiculously, like, either mundane or basic things to screaming audiences. Now I'm going to read the back of the box. Oh, shit! Like, we oh get God, it. We get
the
it.
Back of the box.
I can't believe it.
I would watch you review Simpsons episodes.
I don't like hearing a hot
that's
tub.
Actually a pretty common thing that people do is react.
Like, yeah, there's like a whole podcast for that.
Yeah.
Compared to the fact that I spend a lot of time on YouTube watching people package shop orders.
Like, do you ever end up like writing in after an episode? Like, I really like the way you put the bubble wrap around that one glass container. It really made me feel things.
No, I usually watch them so that I can get ideas for better ways to package my own stuff for the shop.
It made me feel safe.
Speaking of, if you want an SML shirt, you need to let Joe know.
I was thinking about that actually. Still waiting on a design call.
I know it. Dude, I spent all day without being able to access anything.
I feel like you'll have better luck getting people interested. I feel like you'll get better luck getting interest in the shirt if there's a design to show people.
I'm working on it.
Hey. Oh, no, of course. I'm just saying.
Suffer from FOMO? That when it comes no, to... then buy a shirt.
But the thing is with it, is people think, oh, well, if you're making a design or something, just whip it up and it'll take you like, 15, 20 minutes? And it's like, no. I have arthritis for fucking starters.
So no, I'm not saying anything like that. I did
three digital paintings this weekend.
Oh.
And each one of them took me 8 to 10 hours.
Jeez.
Don't get me wrong. I have no sensation of what you just said at all regarding like the idea of like we're expecting a rush. But what I'm saying though is like if people are like being told, hey, if you want this shirt, pony up 40.
Do you
want
to tell them what my plan to put on it is though, Joe? What I have stitched up.
I'm very excited about your plan.
You guys want to hear?
The current design is a plate of pancakes with a bottle of syrup with the SML logo. That is the plan. I don't know how it looks in your head. I'm excited to see what thought you have for it. Mm-hmm. I don't know if we could put like 70s advertising font on it that says because someone might listen.
Mm-hmm.
Something like that. I'm excited.
Oh, for sure. Like, I'm looking forward to seeing it. I was just saying it in the sense of, like, when someone's being like, when you're like, hey, buy this shirt. It's like 20, 25 bucks. Pony up. And people are like, what's the shirt? They're like, don't ask dumb questions. Buy the shirt.
Like, shut your whore mouth.
If you listen to this podcast, you can just assume the shirt is going to be just as dumb as everything else we say on here. But in my wonderful illustrative style.
But just imagine the shirt just was just literally the word.
I'm just going to send out like, shirts that say SML and have a dick on them.
But it would be SML written out in wingdings in tiny font. Like, I'm so glad I spent
that. Now I kind of want to do that like on the sleeve or something. That would be cool.
SML written out in wingdings. Do it.
I threatened that I wanted to use Comic Sans, and she shut that down.
I will not let that.
You said Comic Sans. You touch my Comic Sans.
I paid $400 for my sublimation printer. It is not for Comic Sans.
Not to be sullied with your crash font.
You might happen to sell a million of them to the Undertale community.
Yeah.
Is that the font that that game uses?
It's the font that one character in the game uses, and he's named after it.
Mm-hmm.
But the joke is that anything that's even remotely related to Undertale gets like a million views or, you know, whatever's like just saying it here, assuming it's not edited out. This Someone will be our most popular listen. Episode ever.
Yeah.
In fact, that's
it'll
the title.
Get double our digit view.
Our most popular episode ever sounds like a good title.
There you go. No, just name the episode Undertale. There you go. Bam.
Oh, there you go.
I'll call it the one we name drop Undertale. I still haven't played Undertale. It's finally on Xbox, and I still haven't had the time to just sit down and fire it up.
Okay, it was on Game Pass too, wasn't it?
I think it still is on Game Pass.
Well, I thought they removed it.
I bought it.
Maybe so.
Did that game to me for the specific purpose of playing it, and I just never got around to it. But I want to. It's going to happen.
My advice is to enjoy it and don't have an opinion about it.
Oh, no, it is still on Game Pass. You're right.
Why would you not have an opinion about it? Just say, I played it. It was a game.
No, you don't want to say anything like that.
The fanboys will come after you.
The fans will come after you.
It's scary.
They actually come after you, or they just be
How
like...
How dare you opinionize?
Yeah.
I mean, it's just a game, right?
It's scary. No, I'm
pretty sure Undertale is a way of life, actually.
Mm-hmm. Joe, I'm pretty sure you can't title this episode Undertale now. We've done too many hot takes.
You know the phrase, cult following?
Like, this puts the cult in it.
This puts the cult in cult following, yes.
who hates the game that is so great? They do. Kill them! They do.
All right, so reviews. Should we get to those?
Sure.
Uh-huh. Oh, yes. No. I'm not sure if there's a following for Tell Your Fears or not.
See, look, you fired him up. Now he just doesn't want to stop.
Yeah.
First game to talk about is Undertale.
Push the button.
First game to talk about is Atelier Fearis, The Alchemist, and the Mysterious Journey DX, developed by Gust, published by Koei Tecmo America, released April 22nd on Switch, PS4, and PC for $39.99, also available in the Mysterious Trilogy Deluxe Pack for $89.99. Together with Sophie and Plakta, two alchemists who she meets by chance, Fearis ventures to the outside world and learns alchemy from Sophie. In order to take the official certification exam in a year, she must practice her alchemy skills, complete tasks, and search for licensed alchemists in towns and villages that she visits to collect recommendation letters. Purnell, tell us about your time with Atelier Fearis, The Alchemist, and the Mysterious Journey DX.
I swear, that's the description makes it sound more boring than it actually is. Your job is to go get letters of recommendation from other people. Are you up to the adventure of
the
getting
notary,
work done?
The video game.
Notarized.
Finally.
My time of life. So, Atelier Fearis is...
being a notary public.
It's my time to shine. Stamp.
My mom was a notary for like 20 years. She would love that game, yeah.
20 years.
Well, there you go. There's your review. Joe's mom would love Atelier Fearis, the game. But this game is the second of the trilogy for this franchise. I want to say it's like Arlen, but I never get the names of them right. But basically, the trilogy is Sophie, Fearis, and a pair of girls who enter a painting, which you'll hear about next week. But for the most part, with this one, this one made some interesting changes to the format that I was used to, which yielded mixed results for me. So the idea behind this game is that Fearis lived in a cave, like literally her entire life was spent living in a cave village that was blocked off by a giant steel stone door that only privileged people could leave and come through, like basically people for trade or like hunting and stuff like that. So much of her life, she pretty much just wanted to see what was on the other side of the door. And unfortunately, her family wouldn't let her go out there. Her village wouldn't let her go out there, doubly so because she had a gift for finding ore, because she could hear the ore in the walls. So she could just find ore. And that's a large part of how the town was able to prosper, living in this cave at its during this period where she was there. Anyway, eventually, like Joe said, she comes across Sophie through a weird circumstance and event, discovers that she has a talent for alchemy, And her new purpose becomes to go out into the world and experience it, because this is her ticket to do so. The beginning of the game involves a sort of like tutorial period where they want you to get acclimated with the idea of like, here's how you'll get tasks, and here's how alchemy is performed in this game. And this is pretty much also the world clock, how the clock will work in the game. You get 30 days to resolve a number of issues within town for people. And this involves going around, finding items on the ground and collecting them, and then talking to people, of course, and learning what their actual village problems happen to be. Depending on what kind of tasks you perform, whether it's talking to the right person, finding the right items, or any number of other things like seeing character events, you will get, I guess, like recipe ideas that will pop into your head, or a clue to further lead you to recipe ideas. Once you get a full recipe, you will then get pretty much access to being able to create the item. Take it to the atelier, put it in the cauldron, and then perform a sort of mini game with it. Like in the previous game, I mentioned how the cauldron work is like a bunch of items you lay down on specific like circles on the board. It's hard to explain how it works in these games, but at least this one's a little easier. Instead of that style in this one, when you see the alchemy grid, it'll be like a 4x4 square. And within the square, there will be some lines, like full connected lines. If you place ingredients, shapes, crap, this is a weird game to describe.
every ingredient.
Hush your damn fuss, man.
With descriptions of this game.
You're goddamn right I am.
With words.
I don't do that anymore. I stopped the drugs, okay? I can't do that. this is sober Purnell giving a description.
I'm not tripping balls anymore.
So as far as how the ingredients are placed on this grid, every ingredient in game form is represented by like a tetromino. So, for example, a bucket of water might be a small L piece, right? You want to slot that L piece or whatever shape onto this grid. And if those pieces of it overlap the line and completely fill in the line, you'll activate a special property for the thing you're creating. So you might, say, have a bomb that has increased firepower, or a herb that heals for more hit points than usual. So that, coupled with a few other things like elemental properties on these ingredients, it gets a little hectic, but it eases you into it at least, so you're not just kind of like tripping balls as you try to play. So essentially, you're doing these things to create these quick ingredients and items to give to the townspeople. And once you've done that, you're given the KO/OK to leave the village and explore for your own. But under a really annoying ass condition, you have 1 year to get your certification and pass the alchemy exam. Otherwise, you have to go back to town and get the bad ending, because you'll never be allowed to leave again. So you're tasked with doing this. And the game does have a clock in the upper left corner that will tell you 342 days to go, 310 days to go, 275 days to go, and it ticks down. And that clock moves like a damn truck. It drives you freaking crazy. If you're the type of person who plays games and wants to do everything immediately, you're going to have a rough time with this. Guess what kind of person I am? That guy. So what ends up happening is you get exposed to one of my favorite changes of this game franchise, which is a massive open world to explore, complete with multiple towns, whereas in the old games you had one town that you stayed in and just kept going back to. And this one, you get many towns to visit. Your atelier is a portable one that you carry with you, and you can just set it up wherever there's a campfire that you come across. It's a large world to explore with cool monsters to fight. Always something new to discover. Like, oh, this is a new ingredient source. Or, hey, there's a monster I've never fought before. Here's a cool story event or a quest I can fulfill. All these things you see. And the entire damn time, your brain is going to be on the, fuck, this clock is still ticking. And again, it goes fast. Now, one positive to this clock is that it's not the end of the world, in a sense. Like, if you complete the quest, the game doesn't stop. Like, you're able to go back after getting your certification exam and being confirmed to stay outside and fulfill all the stuff you want. Because there's a game after the exam. It's not like, well, this is post-game content. It's more game. It's just now you don't have this limitation anymore. But until you fulfill that goal, move your ass. Because the last thing you want is to think you have all the time in the world, because you start with 361 in-game days, only to discover that you've run out of time when you really needed it. And the things that take place in this game that require you to drain time, of course, is walking, because whenever you walk places, that takes time. Fighting in battles, well, when you get into a battle, battles are fairly straightforward. You know, you have your attack, your skills. Sometimes you have passive abilities that can factor in based off of certain characters, like what they might have. But after any fight you get into, you lose LP, and LP is essentially your stamina. As your stamina goes down, you have less, you're less effective at collecting items when you do searches and things of that nature. And eventually you're just ineffective at all, and you need to rest, going back to the atelier campfire to rest, which again takes up time. Harvesting and scavenging takes up time. Literally everything you do takes time in this game. So be smart about crap. Like, honestly, I spent a lot of my time trying to avoid monsters if I could, which is not like me at all, because I wanted to use all my time collecting goods to forge. And I was like, if the game isn't going to stomp me with terrible monsters that force me to fight, I'm going to just keep doing this. Worst case scenario, I get to a fight where I can't win. And then guess what? I'll use that time I backed up to grind. So there you go. Merry Christmas to me. but I know it might seem like I'm dumping on it in regards to how I describe it in that regard, but that would be far from the truth. It's just the fact that I'm one of those people who wasn't really big on the time calendar structure, whereas most Atelier games before Sophie pretty much functioned that way. They all had like clocks that you had to adhere to and fulfill, because their goal, or I guess the developer's goal, is to kind of push you forward and make you not stand in place and just do everything per area and then move forward.
Keep your ass moving.
Keep your ass on the move and experience the narrative we set out for you, you know? But
For the people who picked up the first game last week, what do they have for them in this one? Is it worth picking up the second one? Is it worth picking up this trilogy? What are your thoughts on the price tags here?
I think at this point, given my feelings on this game, which I guess you may as well be about to hear right now, I think the trilogy is definitely worth the price, because despite what I said about being frustrated by the clock, I do prefer this one to Sophie, because one, it may sound corny or hokey, but I like the concept of this game. Has anybody on this thing played Grandia 1?
Yes.
Okay. So Grandia 1, one of my favorite aspects to that game was how the main character's main goal wasn't to fulfill a major mission or to save the world, but that did happen by the end of the game. Spoilers, he just wanted to explore. Oh, well, tough shit.
Yeah, pretty much.
I think it's been enough time for that one.
Oh, yeah. But, like, his main purpose and desire and driving force was he just wanted to see the world outside of his home and beyond the Great Wall that was within range of his town. And every interaction you had, kind of factored into that. This is how this game is, too. Like, even though you have this mission of getting your alchemy certification and all, the real driving force for her is just being outside and seeing things. Like, it may sound dumb, but to see a character get excited about, what the heck is this stuff? Oh, that's rain. Like, it's a surprisingly endearing thing, like, in a world where everything's fucked and it's just like everything just feels mundane as shit. Like, well, yeah, I'm driving my car again, or I'm getting more groceries, typical junk. You have this character in the game who's like, cool, wind. I've always wanted to feel wind. Like, wow. Like, I'm taking wind and rain for fucking granted. This kid hasn't had access to it in 16 years, and she's freaking out over it. Like, maybe I should go dance in the rain at some point.
Think of the people, like Chris, you rarely see snow. How crazy was it when it was all snowy and icy and shit down there? Dance in the streets? I thought you danced in the streets.
I didn't.
I feel like you would have danced in the streets until you ran out of heat. Like, I don't know how I feel about that.
No, we pretty much immediately sought shelter because, dancing in the streets okay if there's, like, heat to get back to.
Yeah, because that was a bad scene for a lot of folks. Like, quick tangent, but, like, there were a number of people who actually did do the dancing in the street and then came into their houses to no heat. And unfortunately for a few of those people, the consequences were grave. So,
oh yeah,
you made the right call, sir, to get some damn shelter.
Yeah. And, you know, I see freezes occasionally. And, of course, I've lived in at least one other state before. So,
seems like it happened to be Arizona.
Massachusetts.
Oh, so you dealt with both ends of the spectrum.
Yeah.
It just stop raining.
He had a heat wave when it was 88 degrees outside.
We don't know how the fuck to handle this here. But that's Fierce in a nutshell. She deals with heat waves. Oh, I should mention that, too. Speaking of the weather. During her exploration, she does come across like changing weather conditions too, which factors into like what she can find in the field, whether it be monsters or resources or what have you. So even that's like another element or another pin in the awesome open world puzzle. Like, yeah, it's not crazy dense with like humans just like going about their business or whatever, but then again, it's a gust game. They're not bursting at the seams with technological flair in their titles. They're just making a fun game.
Yeah.
I think they succeeded with that here. So,
well, we'll talk about one more game in the coming weeks. I don't know if it'll be next week or the week after. We'll figure that out. So we'll hold off on an absolute final verdict on the trilogy. But for $40 on this one, is it worth picking up by itself, or do you think it's worth waiting for the trilogy and hearing the whole story?
I feel like at this point it's worth the trilogy even without reviewing the third game, only because if both games are 40 by themselves, and I like the first one, and spoiler, I like this one too, that means you'd pay an extra $10 for a third game in a trilogy. So in that regard, I think it's a solid buy it on the whole trilogy. And if the third game ends up sucking, well, you kind of
we'll find out.
Coming soon.
All right, well, next game to talk about is called Nonguns Doppelganger Edition, developed by Brainwash Gang and Kitteface Software, published by Digirati, released May 6 on Xbox One, Switch, PS4, and PC for $14.99. Nonguns is a nihilistic action platformer, roguelike, obscure in both gameplay and theme. It's a riddle that demands sacrifice. Battle grotesque creatures, kill quickly to maintain your combo meter, and rescue worshippers to become part of your idol army to buy upgrades. Tim, tell us about your time with Nonguns Doppelganger Edition.
Interesting. All right, yeah, Nonguns is a side-scrolling roguelike deal where you're this little skeletal-looking dude who explores these somewhat... It's like a... Like, you're not going, like, room to room to room in, like, a linear fashion. Like, there's doors that lead out of different rooms, and there's, like, a little map... In your upper right, so you're kind of like navigating a maze, almost like a 2D maze, and so what I like about this game, let's start there. I think the art looks really cool. I do really enjoy the art in this game. It has this nice kind of like pretty. It's really detailed, but there's not a lot of color in it. Most of the game is just straight black and white.
So it's got that Mad World
color like palette a little bit. Vibe and, to and it. And there's splashes of like a dull orange, I guess I'll describe it as. but the drawing of the lines on everything looks really good, like really detailed, especially kind of like, so that, you know, it's a roguelike, it kind of automatically generates a lot of its environs, but the ones that like kind of like your hub area, your static areas, and a lot of the monster designs look really, really cool. I guess I'll say, like, yeah, a lot of there's a lot of gross stuff going on as you're navigating through here. There's like giant I don't know if they're gigantic or you're really small, I guess, in fairness. There's like gigantic fingers crawling around and legs hopping about and skulls and other weird looking things.
It's a fucking weird game.
It's a really weird looking game, and it kind of trades on its weirdness to be like, hey, come explore this, come check. Like it said, it is intentionally very obscure with what it's doing. It reminded me of Binding of Isaac, where, you know, you pick up items and the game like doesn't tell you what they do. The menus are make no goddamn sense. Like, I was just trying to find the fucking options to turn off vibration on the controller, because it was just vibrating way too much. And I generally don't like a lot of vibration when I'm playing things on the Switch anyways, because just the whole thing is going ham in my hands. And it was unnecessarily difficult to find that. Like, I get the theme you're going for, but maybe when it comes to, like, the settings of your game, just be, like, a little bit more clear. But, you know, you do what you do, and you did what you did. You know what you did. Kind of my problem is I just really didn't like playing it, which is a big one, we'll say. I was off-put pretty quickly in the tutorial. So the game, you start out with like a handgun, like kind of a ridiculous oversized hand. Not too ridiculous. It seems like a little large, but it's just so you can kind of tell what weapon you're holding. You start off with a handgun, and you can shoot, which is up in the trigger. But then you also have four different movements options that are mapped to different buttons. So it's like, okay, jump. There's a jump and a slide and a roll and a dash. And immediately, like, as I went through those, I'm like, I'm just going to not use those all. I'm just going to stick to, like, maybe dash. Maybe that sounds good. I'm just going to stick to one of them.
I had to use the slide a lot to shoot upwards.
Ah, yes. It just feels like that could have been consolidated for an ease of use, because it's like just frustrating trying to remember what's where. Like, really, I guess there's really no reason in my mind that there needs to be a roll and a dash. I don't really get like that could have been consolidated. Slide has been universally down plus jump since the days of Mega Man 3. And yeah, so I feel like I really didn't like that. So then, you know, you get going around in these levels, and I was then having a tough time, like, always registering when my character was taking damage. Just because sometimes, like, it seems like orange is bad, generally speaking, but sometimes orange can just be, like, kind of in a puddle on the floor. But also, like, you collect orange, like, when you kill an enemy, orange will fly to your person, and kind of restore like a bit of health, I think. A lot of guessing in this game, because it does not tell you jack shit. Like, to be clear, this game tells you nothing. It tells you nothing.
Nothing at all. Like,
not a damn thing.
It tells you
thing.
The title.
Yeah, it tells you the title, and then you start, and it walks you through like what the buttons do, to its credit, I guess. But then after that, it's like, you don't know what the items you're doing, you pick up are doing. You don't really, I mean, you can kind of puzzle out like your objective is, you know, go right, explore this thing, get to a boss, rinse, repeat, and then start figuring things out from there. Like, there is a crypt in the first area where you can go in and like open up some rib cages and check them out. And surely some stuff goes in there eventually. But, you know, you go into a shop and there is a currency cost. I think it's interesting that, like, you get a point every time you shoot your gun. So theoretically, you could just sit there and hammer on it to, like, buy items. So you don't know what you're... I guess it's a game that's going to take a lot of commitment for you to figure out... To, like, even start to figure out what's going on and start to make progress. As it was, I did not get very far. I was just didn't feel like very good about moving my character around or shooting things. And
I do wish you could naturally just shoot up instead of having to slide to shoot up.
Fantastic.
Like, this isn't fucking Mega Man. I don't want to only be able to shoot forward. It'd be nice to be able to look up, maybe, maybe diagonal. That'd be crazy. Yeah.
And that's a real, that might be crazy. But it feels like a game that, you know, because enemies are coming at you from all angles And it's difficult sometimes with just like the layouts of the room where you're on a platform and then some enemies are slightly below you and you can't just like shoot down or crouch to shoot a little bit lower. You actually have to, you know, pop down onto the platform, fire off some shots before they do something despicable to you, and then get back up there. And just compared to, you know, other kind of games in the genre that I might be talking about here very shortly, it just left me really wanting for a smoother action experience. I like games that obfuscate information, but like, man, there is just nothing here to go on. Like, it's a game where you will have to be like taking some notes or, you know, working with a community online to figure out like what items do. Yeah,
I can't wait to see the wiki for this game.
And I also didn't like Binding of Isaac, by the way. I didn't like the way that game played either. So I bounced off of that one really quick. I know it seems like it's a game that I would be really fond of. I mean, it's updated like a ton of times over the years, and I should probably give it another go at some point. But of all the roguelikes, it is not one that I was ever like obsessed with. And this, despite taking place from a 2D perspective, seems to share some ideas with that game that also put me off a bit. The music in this game, at first there's none. For like the first like 5-10 minutes, there's zero music. And then like it's like really gentle in the background. Like, it's not like, for a game that looks almost like a little bit death metal, like, it is not going in that direction. Like, it is a much more melancholy, subdued background music, which I appreciate. So like the look and the sound of this game, I appreciate the actual playing of it and trying to make progress in it, I did not appreciate at all. No, thank you.
Well, need a verdict. $15 on this one. What do you think about it?
No, I wouldn't. It is not for me, certainly. Maybe if you're really looking for something to bang your head against, like I suspect there is a level of depth here that some people could get really into, but just like the way that it plays was a just total non-starter for me.
Yeah, I can agree with you on that. I wish it just told you more.
A little bit more, maybe.
A little more, and then let me shoot up, because goddamn, those enemies come flying from everywhere.
Yeah, and like the little mosquito guys.
It's a tough one.
Like, the first time I got to a boss, and like it was a thing that was spewing out mosquitoes, and I'm just kind of like going through doing my pattern, doing all right, and then I like noticed that the boss's life bar had gone fucking nowhere, and I was like, oh dear, oh no, and I'd been fighting it for like a few minutes. I'm just like, oh no. Oh my god.
Oh, man. Well, you got one other game to talk about. That is called Rising Hell, developed by Tahoe Games and Togue.
Rising Heck. There might be children listening.
Oh, fuck. Sorry.
Yeah, fuck you.
Developed by Tahoe Games and Togue Productions, published by Chorus Worldwide, released May 18th on PS4, 19th on Steam, 20th on Switch, 21st on Xbox for $9.99. Rising Heck is a vertical action roguelite in which you wage a one-man war against the ghoulish gatekeepers of Heck. Fight upwards towards freedom using the unique Heck Break attack to battle beastly bosses and resurrect your Lord Lucifer from his unearthly cage. Tim, tell us about your time with Rising Hell.
Whoa! Oh, jeez. I had to call it Rising, you know, I keep calling it Rising Heck. I can't have in my... be having my child say naughty words. He knows all the naughty words.
Teach him right. Well.
Rising Heck. This is a roguelike I like more than the previous one, but not as much as some others. So the deal with Rising Hell is a vertical based action roguelike game. So for those of you that were big fans of like the first few levels of Kid Icarus, this is or you wanted downwell but going up, this might be a game that you're interested in, because I wonder if it has Tate mode on the Switch. That would be cool. Probably not, but where you can switch the thing vertically.
I don't see it listed on the page, so I'm not too sure.
Probably not. Probably not. I mean, you know, it is in wide format, playing it on Xbox on the television. So yeah, it's just that way. Anyways, so yeah, you are and there's some things this game doesn't explain that I wish it did too, like the eponymous Hellbreak attack. I wasn't sure what that was for a bit, but I figured it out. But you know, otherwise the game does a good job of in light of what we just talked about, this game does a good job of telling you what things are.
This game has words in it.
It does. It has words in it. And yeah, like when you go into a shop, it tells you what the items do before you purchase them. It's that kind of game. So you will pick one of three characters off the bat. And when I say one, I mean, there's only one unlocked. So that's the one you're starting with. The other two you have to unlock. And you go into a hellish looking world, which you must. The game is all about scrolling vertically. You are jumping up and up and up and up and up these kind of these vertical scrolling towers. You fight enemies along the way. You collect currency. You purchase items. You fight bosses. That jazz. So basically, like the game is separated into different like. Biomes, and each biome is broken down into different sections. So what'll happen is like you'll get to the end of like the very first area, and then you'll have, in most cases, you'll have two choices from where you can go from there. And it'll say the name of the area, so you will know what the, you know, what stage you're getting into and what lies beyond said door. I think the rooms themselves are set and not randomly generated, though the order in which they may be presented to you, and you won't necessarily see all of them or have to clear all of them to get through a particular section. There's because you only play through like five sections before you move on to the next biome, and there's more subsections to that. So that's where you can make decisions about how you are. One of the places you can make decisions about where you're progressing forward. Once you get a familiarity with what, you know, it's what the titles of the different rooms means, and it's not like they're, well, in this one, there's like a saw blade chasing you, or in this one, there's a lot of this enemy, or in here, there's this kind of boss. It's like that is the stuff you have to figure out along the way, but at least they have names to the rooms so that you can actually figure that out, you know, decently easy enough. So as you ascend, you collect currency to buy items. The items that you can buy in shops are all passive upgrades, and it's all stuff like, oh, if you're below this amount of health, then enemies have a higher chance of dropping health orbs, or, you know, do more damage in this situation, or your power-ups will last longer. There's also power-ups that certain enemies will drop. And those are just limited use, and you can't really switch off them. But they have things where it's like, oh, here is a laser that will bounce off things, or here is a something that makes your heck break attack bigger and stronger, or you know, your character will do this spinning attack sort of deal. Actually, that does vary depending on the characters, because the characters are very different. The first character you get is melee focused, and the second one is ranged focused, so they are just complete polar opposites. A weird thing about the first character you get is he kind of has a three-hit combo, but like the timing between the hits, like the time for your combo to reset, the reset time of the combo is very long. Like, if you tap the, you know, the first hit of the combo and then you wait like 3 seconds and then you hit the button again, it will still be the second hit of the combo, which is, I'm going to say, not a great feature, because that threw me off a lot early on. It, like the window, I think the reset is something like 5 seconds. It's really long. So it'd be an instance where I'm expecting the first move of the combo to come out on an enemy, and it would be like this uppercut move that finishes the combo and hits in a completely different, you know, with a completely different hitbox. So that is something I wouldn't have done, but it's not, you know, totally insurmountable. It's just kind of, it hurts the feel of that particular character.
Yeah.
I should say. But So you go through there, and I should say there's two types of currencies, because the currency you can spend in the shops, but then you also pick up these gems that are used to purchase things before you go into another run. So that is what you'll use to unlock characters, and there are other modifiers you can buy. They don't really seem to take the shape of like, oh, this will make the game easier for you flatly. It's more of, well, this modifier will do this at the expense of this. So you're like purchasing trade-offs that you can do. So it's not like a straight thing that you can, you know, grind out currency to make the game easier and then you'll make it to the end. You kind of have to get good, which you will. You'll get good and you'll get better at collecting currency and you'll be able to purchase more items and you will inevitably ascend higher and higher in the realm of heck. So the game has, for the sake of replay value, the game has three different characters. It has these different modifiers. It has like different challenge modes you can jump into, which is cool. It's pretty solid overall. I didn't find like the moment to moment like action gameplay is pretty decent. I think what it really needed was something a little more like, because the only upgrades you find in a like in a run are the choices you're making in a shop as to what like passive bonuses to purchase, and I didn't really feel like they're not like hugely meaningful. And they don't change the way like you're building. It could slightly change the way you build your character for the run, but not in like it's you're not going to be sitting there like, oh, man, I had this like awesome build going on that was totally different from this other build that I had in a previous run. It's just kind of like it ends up all feeling a little bit too much the same as you're going through. So it's like decently fun, but not you're not seeing like a huge variety from run to run to run. Like even if you're picking different rooms to go in a particular biome, like they're not all that much different at the end of the day. Some have different like tricks and traps, but they're not like that wildly different. So it's not a thing where I was feeling like a one more game, type of itch to it. It was kind of like I do a couple runs, I'd be like, oh, okay, I'm good for right now. You know,
exactly like that. Yeah.
Okay for right now, and that's what I sound like when I'm in the house and not using my podcast voice.
Hi,
I just sit down, I'd be like, okay, but you know, it's not necessarily a bad thing to just want to be able to like, okay, before I play, you know, sit down and invest hours into something else, I'm going to sit down and I'm going to play like a run or two of this, and it's going to take me like, you know, 15 minutes and, you know, maybe make a little bit of progress, maybe unlock a few things and then, you know, go on with it. I think the art is, again, very good, very heckish. the music is a little hit or miss for me. Like, it feels like in some levels, like, all I'm hearing is kind of like the lead guitar. And like, I wish I was getting a bit more depth to the music, I guess, might be the best way to describe it. Like, it didn't sound very like heavy. It was just kind of like, I get what they were going for a little bit, but it didn't. I don't know. I didn't love it.
Didn't scratch the edge.
Yeah, it didn't really scratch the edge. So yeah, it's a pretty solid roguelike type game with a kind of a neat hook of like, okay, it's all about the vertical scrolling. Though, as far as like, as far as roguelikes that involve spending a lot of time in the air with your character, I think I enjoyed playing the bit I played of Scourgebringer a bit more. Which is on Game Pass still, I think. That still came up. Man, we don't mention that as early in the episode as we used to, I feel like. They used to be like within the first like 2 minutes. Like we're gonna start losing our payouts from Xbox.
I mean, we talked about Undertale being on Game Pass. Oh, that's right.
Somebody did mention it was on Game Pass. Yeah. Okay, good. We did get it out of the way in the intro. Otherwise we'd all be turned into automatons. So yeah, like it's a pretty solid action roguelike deal. Not the best, but certainly not the worst. It's a decently fun thing.
Well, $10 on it, $8.99 if you pre-order, which you still have nice a week to do so. So what do you think of this one?
I'm going to say try it.
There is like, a demo you can download and try. So there you go.
Try it. Literally, just try it. And then if you're like, oh, man, this tickles my pickle. This scratches my itch. I feel a hook sinking into my soft, supple flesh. Then it could be a game for you to buy. Yeah, that's not like a terrible price for it either, I don't think. So, yeah, I might officially give it a try. Again, it's a pretty crowded market in the roguelike space these days. So you never know what you'll really get into.
$10, I think I'll give it a go. It's not that expensive, and it looks cool. So I think you sold me on it.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah.
All right. Congrats. Well, that is it for
welcome
you, Tim.
Welcome to the sale, Rising Heck. Yeah. Is, man, I worked like freaking 16 hours yesterday. It sucked.
Go to Ecubus or to learn more about why he worked 16 hours and it sucked.
Yeah, check me out on @Ecubizer on Twitter. Just wait for the tweets about this episode. Yeah, like because Joe asked me if I was going to be on the show like somewhere in the middle of the day yesterday. I was like, yeah, sure. Why wouldn't I be? And then like when I got home, I'm like, I want to go to sleep. Like almost told Joe, I'm just like, maybe I won't be there. If I might fall asleep right now. And I did fall asleep for a little bit, but that was like around the 6 o'clock hour. So
Rising.
I really wanted to keep sleeping, but hey, I got it up. Whoa.
Well, now you can go to sleep.
So.
Rising something else.
Boy, what about he going to sleep now? He's rising up.
Hi-yo.
Hi-yo.
He's raising up.
Oh, God. Do you have any final words before we move on?
I tried thinking of a joke, but my poor, tired, slagged brain couldn't think of a goddamn thing.
Slag.
Yeah, pretty much. Good night.
Good night. Good All fight. Right. What'd you say?
A good fight. Good night.
Oh, man. All right. Next game to talk about is Retro Machina, developed by Orbit Studio, published by Super.com, released May 12th on Xbox One, Switch, PS4, and PC for $19.99. Retro Machina is a single-player action and exploration game set in a retro-futuristic universe. Experience the journey of a little robot as they solve intricate puzzles and begin unraveling the mysteries of a world long forgotten. Cole, tell us about your time with Retro Machina.
So, Retro Machina, the whole premise is that you're a little robot in a great big world run entirely by robots. It's kind of what people in the 50s, what happened to Joe?
I'm laughing at Angerth came in and said, you know what's funny? When you open the stream, full volume, and the first sound you hear is supple flesh.
Oh my goodness. I was so
Listen
confused.
To the previous review, like, folks. You'll see what we mean by supple flesh.
Okay. Anyway, this game does not have supple flesh. There is no flesh at all. It is all robots. It's kind of a world where, you know how, like, in the 50s, they thought that the 2000s was going to be, like, this weird mesh of retro futurism?
Mm-hmm.
This is that. It's basically like somebody from the 50s imagined this was 2021, and that's how the game is set. There aren't any humans left. It's just the robots. And the very first thing that caught me about this game, what drawed me into it, was the art style and the design of the worlds. I cannot stress how fucking pretty this game is. It is beautiful. It is so well illustrated. Everything just looks incredible.
Even just screenshots of the game are gorgeous.
It just stands out. There's I think five different biomes in all. I did not get through all of them. But they're just every time I was in a new area, I was just stopping and looking. Thankfully it kind of lets you do that a lot. Because my biggest complaint with the game is that it's really sparse. I get that, you know, it's a futuristic dystopia kind of thing and, like, there's no humans left. But even the robot presence is really kind of slim. On one hand, I didn't mind it because it meant that I wasn't running into combat too much. Because even though the game plays like an isometric puzzle adventure, there is combat that you will come into contact with. And I kind of just found myself wanting to avoid it. I didn't care about it. I would run into a boss and I'd just shrug and be like, how can I do this with as little effort as possible? It just didn't, there wasn't a whole lot of options for the combat beyond just pressing X most of the time to swing your little wrench. You can have your robot use his ability to hack the other robots around him and take control of them. And that gives you a little more options for how to handle combat, but they are not as smooth as they could be. For example, one of the robots that you can hijack shoots like these little fireballs. And getting to actually use those in a way where like you could direct which way they were being shot was impossible. I was trying to use them to take out a mini boss, and I got annoyed with it to the point that I was like, fuck it, I'll just hit it with my wrench. Because that was just easier.
And whatever works.
Yeah, and it was like, the idea of using the other robot to sabotage and take out the mini boss seemed like such a cool concept, but in actual practice, it didn't work that well. Going back on everything being so pretty, that also leads a little bit of problems with some of the level design. It's not always intuitive that you can go an area because everything on the scene is so pretty, but there may be a big-ass tree in a corner, and it makes perfect sense for it to be there, but it'll be blocking a pathway, and you have no idea you can go that way, and so you'll be backtracking and walking around like a dumbass. And you're like, I don't know where to go. And then you accidentally get too close to the tree wall and realize that it's not a wall at all and you could have gone that way the whole time. What I'm trying to say is it could benefit from like some, hey, dumbass, go this way. They want you to explore. They have secrets all over the place. They want you to struggle to solve the puzzles, to find the hidden areas, to take over the other robots and find different ways to interact with the world that they've created. And it's great. Until you just can't flat out see something mundane. So either having some kind of cutaway when there is a pathway that goes beyond the, what would otherwise be considered an invisible wall. That isn't invisible because it's a fucking tree. having some kind of cutaway when there's an area that you could actually go into or some other kind of hint, spilled paint on a sidewalk or something, just something to draw your attention to make you think, oh, I can go that way. That would be really helpful because otherwise you do just spend a whole lot of time going, I'm just going to walk until I end up in a room with some robots I can kill and then walk some more. That is my biggest beef with it. Everything else, man, you could get lost in the world, even forgiving that it's so sparsely populated, but the problem is that you do get lost when you don't want to, when you just want to progress, when you want to just figure out what you're trying to do. That's frustrating. So some quality of life smoothing out would be really nice, but otherwise I really enjoyed the game and I thought it was so pretty. Also, could use a little more music. There is some like ambient noise, but there was no background audio or background music to the point that I was like, oh yeah, this feels, you know, like it's part of the game.
You know, it's an issue when you mention the music.
I never mentioned the music. And I like the music, I was just like, there's none. It's so quiet. And to an extent, I guess it makes sense, right? Because everything is supposed to just be run by robot dystopia. But I don't know, there's just nothing. I turned on music in the background just to have some sound. And I was just, I don't ever complain. I don't ever notice video game music, but I noticed the absence of it. That's for damn sure.
Don't know what you got till it's gone.
Yeah.
Well, $20 on Retro Machina. What are you thinking?
This is one of those that I feel like it's more of a try it. There's definitely some quality of life shit that needs to go down, but it's got a solid foundation. It could be really awesome if they just smooth some stuff out.
Smooth out the supple flesh.
Yeah. And supple metal? There's no flesh.
That's the problem.
Also, there's a free demo on Steam. So if you want, you can play it that way to see if you like it. But, you know, and if you're as bothered as I was by the lack of background music.
All right. Well, moving on. Next game to talk about is called Chroma Quaternion, developed by XCreate, published by Kemco, released May 7th on Xbox One, Series X and S, and Windows 10 for $14.99. In a world with four kingdoms, each colored by a season where roles are granted by the quad deities, strange happenings suddenly threaten the peace there. A quest begins to find each one's calling in this intrigued fate and journey through the kingdoms to get to the bottom of the mystery. Chris, tell us about your time with Chroma Quaternion.
Yeah, I didn't know how to pronounce it either, so.
Yeah, for Kemco, that's a tough title.
Yeah, which is funny because, you know. All right, so this is like, I think this is maybe review number 200 that I've done of Kemco and XCreate. Pretty
That's
sure.
That's because I did like five of them and noped out after that.
Well, and then I got a computer that could run games, so. And that's, anyway. So yeah, like I've been around the block with this this developer a few times. And in order to start any review of a Kemco game, I have to specify that there's a few different co-developers that Kemco works with. This one's XCreate. The other one that I actually have all of the titles that they've done. I don't have all the XCreate games. I'm actually missing a couple, probably those five that Cole did. but the other one is Hitpoint. And Hitpoint, you know, I always get more excited about those because they're pretty interesting, and I really like a lot of the things that they do in those games. That as opposed to most other JRPGs that are like in the more budget range, plus, you know, different than the XCreate games. And I noticed that this XCreate game actually seems to have drawn some inspiration from the Hitpoint camp. So it's got a few little features, including a very esoteric title that yet still actually makes sense in the context of the game, you know, because it's, what is the title of this game? Chroma Quaternion. Anyway, it's
Quaternion. I do my best. I'm only human.
It is colorful, hence the chroma thing. And Quaternion, it does deal with four kingdoms, four seasons, as it were. But mostly, it deals with, and I'm actually going to quote myself here because I had back in April. I lost the tab. Back in April, I was tagged to this game getting announced as it came out, and without even looking at it, just looking at the one screen, the title screen for it, which showed some characters, I said, male protagonist, check. Secondary female character as potential girlfriend, check. Weird character that will probably end up being some kind of deity, check. Inconsequential other character, check. Those graphics, double check. Yep, looks good. I bet the soundtrack is good. And I'm here to tell you, I'm a gosh darn prophet. That or he's game. So there is a checklist to go through. I actually should really, like, really write one out that's more than just those 4 points. But so this game deals with a male protagonist named Ark, and I've mentioned before that Kemco XCreate RPGs, male protagonists, always male, and they alternate between being insufferable and like good-hearted but kind of bland. And as with the last game that I reviewed, even though it was a little bit of an older game, that character was, you know, the misanthrope or just, you know, kind of a jerk. This character is a nice bland boy. Like I said, his name is Ark. And this game actually kind of deals more with a job system, which you don't see often in the XCreate games, but we did see it in Monster Viator, which is, again, a hit point game. Except that the and, you know, the jobs actually are given like as quests mostly. And, you know, they actually have to do with, you know, actual events in the game rather than, you know, I'm a priest and now I'm a mage and now I'm a knight. It's more like, you know, now I'm a, you know, I'm a dark knight. Now I'm a fisherman. Now I'm a sandstorm enthusiast. You know, it's like weird, random things like that. But they're like specifically what you need in the story at that point. And so that covers that. And then there's Iara, who is a princess, which is not the first time that a princess has been the secondary female character. she is, you know, obviously potentially a love interest. She also is just straight up copied and pasted from another character who's like a princess who's kind of clueless, you know. It's kind of a cliche, I guess. But like, and, you know, usually, like, you know, the secondary female character will have like one quirk, and hers is that like she kind of acts dumb, but then like the really dumb thing that she says turns out to be the true thing. like an example is that like some characters bump into them and then immediately proceed to scam them, like, oh, I got injured, but I'll let you go for like a million GP or whatever. And she's like, oh, these two must be actors who are like actually you know, practicing their craft in front of us. And they're like, no, I think they're actually trying to scam us. And they're like, no, it's right, we're actually actors. So like that kind of thing. It's, you know, it's fun.
Nice.
And you got Four, who is a giant dog, who I don't think is actually a deity. However, there is a pair of twins in there that are clearly like deity adjacent. So I wasn't lying. And who knows, the dog may turn out to be a deity. That is not outside the realm of possibility for this. But
either anyway, way, it looks it's like an adorable dog.
It's an adorable, yeah. It looks like a giant, like, Pomeranian, but, like, you know, husky, not husky size. What's that one big, really big dog?
Alamute?
Mastiff.
No. Mastiff, that's the word.
Yeah, yeah, it's like Mastiff size, but it looks like a Pomeranian. And, yes, it's a good dog. Four is a very good dog. And then there's Evale, who is the maid to the princess, and so she follows around dutifully, and she really hates the protagonist, but she really loves dogs, so she's inconsequential. And, you know, literally her weapon, so you don't equip specific weapons, you just equip what they call a lapis, which is just a jewel, and it strengthens your attacks, but their weapons always stay as the regular weapons. And hers is throwing dinner plates at the enemies. So, real progressive here.
Dinner plates, you say?
Yeah.
I said, I'm officially sold now. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, she throws dinner plates. It's sadly not, like, super wacky like that one game that I did that I can't remember the title of. This one's more straightforward. But I will say, you know, I make fun, but actually this game is really... Well, and this is actually true of most of the Kemco, you know, X-Create games. It is very fun and gets you sucked in. And it has, like, you know, different features. So this one's a little different than most of the other games in its features. I already mentioned the job system. There's also a summoning system wherein you can, you know, if you gain enough divine points from attacking or getting attacked, you can then summon, like, a screen clearing, you know, special deity-based, like, monster, which is actually kind of cool because sprite art has gotten to the point where, you know, it's like a Final Fantasy VI summon, but it like looks like it's about to break the screen. Okay. So yeah, there's some, actually it's pretty cool. And it does not have the weapons eating weapons system that most of those games do. Instead you get three magical pots, and what they do is that there's one for weapons and one for armor, and if you drop them in, then it will extract the special, you know, like, special abilities are tied to specific weapons and armor, but you can, you know, like, something like, I don't know, this heals your life if when you attack an enemy. You can extract those and turn them into rings that you can then equip up to two of per character, and you can strengthen those rings by just dumping in, like, all of your spare weapons and armor. It doesn't take up much of your time. It's just a an item disposal system that, you know, helps you out. So you actually do end up needing money and spending money on like really powerful items, or playing one of the mini game, not mini games, but like the gambling system stuff. So normally these games contain like a lottery, and this one's no different. It's the exact same lottery as you're used to. There's special stones you get at the end of battles or in treasure chests or whatever that you can, you know, gamble away for a chance at getting a really powerful item. Or you can actually roll a roulette 3 times every calendar day. So it actually gives you a kind of a freebie, or 3 freebies every day. So that's actually kind of cool. And of course, you can choose to spend those items on specific, or those jewels on specific items if you want. You know, unlike the other games, I actually found myself going to the weapons and armor shops and actually purchasing items. Usually that's immediately, you know, redundant in like any of these games. So I like that they're kind of keeping the balance there. And yeah, apart from that, it's fun to play. The storyline is actually interesting, but it does play into that, you know, usual cliche kind of, you know, when you load this game up, you know exactly who made it. And, you know, you can even see where it falls in the you know, line of games that have come out. It's on the newer side, that's for sure.
Well, so, it's only $15. So what do you think of this one?
Like with all of them, I give it a buy it. If you're a person who just loves JRPGs, especially older ones, and, you know, you don't mind that it's kind of like a 7 out of 10 sort of experience, it at least is consistent and will, you know, they always satisfy. And, you know, when you play enough of them like I do, you just start to laugh at, like, the things that you see every time. Like, the first dungeon always has a sequence where the protagonist explains to the, I don't know what the secondary character, what the official word is for that, but explains to the secondary character how to jump down from a ledge. That's happened in either 4 or 5 of the games I've reviewed so far.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
I've
played enough of the Chemco games to know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah. Now, I will say, if you have gotten fatigued from the old systems and like the you know, the meta stuff that kind of keeps you from playing the actual game, this one's refreshingly more focused on the actual game. So this is different enough that I think even folks who might be tired of the old formula will maybe get a kick out of this one.
Cool. Sounds good.
Yeah.
All right. Keeping with the theme, next game to talk about has a more pronounceable title, Rise Eterna, developed by Makey, published by Forever Entertainment, released May 13th on the Switch for $19.99. Take on an adventurous journey, meet a whole range of unique characters, and immerse yourself in an engaging storyline. Recruit up to 14 characters, each with their unique abilities, and defeat your worst nightmare in epic fights. Unveil a dark and mature story focused on the relationship between two lost souls, trying to discover the meaning of their life, fighting side by side. Purnell, unique. Tell us about your time with Rise Eterna.
Unique. Review. Done. Rise Eterna. So, essentially, I guess the best way to describe this game would be like Fire Emblem Light. So, the idea behind gameplay in this is a strategy RPG, where it kind of plays out on a very small map. And when I say small map, I mean like as far as the world map is concerned, a place you can go. There are a number of nodes, but the game exists on an island. So between the different kingdoms, you'll be traveling between them with your various party members, starting out with just Nathiel, whose name, I wish it was just Nathan, but it's Nathiel Nathiel and Lua, basically going between the different environments, starting with those two, but over the time, as time progresses and levels progress, you'll come across other party members, other by way of narrative or by other means or whatever. But for the most part, the way I was playing it, I was just coming across people by way of like narrative. And when you come across them, they pretty much join your party. And aside from meeting new people, the other thing you're going to do is just straight up battle in this game. There's not a whole lot you're going to do aside from that battling. So the way it works, though, is when you enter an actual stage, you will be on a map that can honestly be sizably of decent size. Though, don't let that feel daunting, because whereas instead of like a Fire Emblem game, the typical person's movement range is like 5 or something, Nathiel and Lua's movement is 10, which is insane. Like, I've never played a game like this where any character
move unit halfway across the map.
Yeah, pretty much. Like, the maps are big enough, though, that 10 isn't halfway across the map, mind you. But still, you're going to get around much faster than you would expect, knowing that that movement range is what it is. But you'll be able to move around the map. And typically, the goal for levels is going to be to just, like, you know, kill everybody on the screen and then not lose key members of your party. But as you're moving around the screen, what will happen is, like, there's your team's turn and the enemy's turn. On your turn, you can move every one of your units one time. And if you put yourself in a position to attack an enemy, you can attack as well. Some unit types have, you know, like melee attacks. Others have ranged attacks. Others have melee ranged attacks, like basically the spear users, essentially, for that one. They can attack two spaces away. Every once in a blue moon as well, an enemy may well be able to counter you, or in your case, the same thing. You can counter them. But that isn't as common as I would like it to be, though. Eventually, you'll unlock some skills, which I'll talk about in a second, that could add to that. So when you get into a battle, usually it's just your stats pitted against the enemy stats. But if you put a character unit next to your primary unit, they can lend support stats to that main attacker. So you might say put one of your archers next to Nathiel. He'll go into a scuffle, and he'll get maybe like +2 agility while his friend is standing next to him in combat. So it behooves you to kind of have people supporting each other in battles. And on the enemy's turn, of course, they'll attack you. You know, typical fare for enemy combat, nothing special. On maps, aside from like fighting enemies as you're exploring, you'll come across treasure chests and also gather points. If you come across any of those things, you can pretty much just acquire items from them. Treasure chests, you have to walk up to them and open them, some of which are unlocked, so you can just grab them like any old thing. But the locked ones require a treasure chest key. And treasure chest keys can be acquired either through finding them on a map or building them using materials and resources at the end of a stage. Materials being the things you find through the other thing you find on the map, which are gathering points. Usually like water or bushes or like rock. And you gather on those spaces, you'll get corresponding resources from those things. So a bush might yield berries or twigs. A rock might yield ash or stone. And the water yields, I don't know, scorpions or something. No, it yields water. So you'll do that. So essentially, you'll be doing the thing I like about that, though, to an extent, though, is that it is random, 100% random what you get. And what I mean by that is, on one level, I found a treasure chest that was locked. Further into the level, one of the gathering points gave me a chest key. I took the chest key back to the chest, opened it up, and I got a chest key. Seemed what? Kind of pointless. Exactly, that's how it sounded. I found a locked treasure chest, found a treasure chest key within the stage, which can be used to unlock that treasure chest. I took it back to the chest, unlocked it with the treasure chest key, and got a treasure chest key.
Was it like a different color chest key, or was it literally, I used this item. Key to get the same? What the fuck?
That's when randomization goes wrong. It's like, if I had any doubts that it was randomized, that would have put it to rest right there. Like, no one in their right mind would design a game to do that. No one. Resident Evil doesn't do that shit. At least they have the balls to give you, you know, a spade key and a club key. I mean, it's not like that. But, you know, I digress. Like, I'm just basically, it's just worth noting that you never know what you're going to get, literally. Sometimes you'll go to a gather point and get literally nothing for it. God. So, now, keeping in mind, the only way to get items in this game is by way of constructing them using gathered items or gathered resources. So, that lends itself to one general annoyance that you could possibly run into with the game, which is that healing items, because the other items I almost don't care too much about. There's like throwing items, like, I mean, yield status effects on enemies and stuff like that, but I've always been bad at using that kind of stuff. The healing items, though, which you will need to use, can't be purchased. They can only be constructed, and they do run out. So if you happen to have a health potion and you just you'll burn through them because you get your ass hit. If you run out of healing potions and you didn't happen to grab enough resources to make new ones during your journeys, you'll have to go back to old stages and play through them to get more resources. Now, that can be annoying because characters don't get experience points in this game, so the grind in this game is literally to get resources. There are no level ups. So there's a trade-off to it. Like, it's not as annoying as balls in some respects, but there's benefits to this too. One, when you go back to old stages, all the treasure chests and gather spots show up anew, so you can re-loot those things and get new stuff. All random, of course, but still, you can loot them and get new stuff. In addition to that, every time you beat a stage, whether it's an old stage or a new stage, you get a skill point. That's an interesting thing for me. Like, I was very shocked that redoing an old stage got me skill points. But when you beat it, when you get a skill point, you can go to your carom, the skill tree, and unlock new abilities. Now, every character gets two different trees of skills to work from: hero skills and generic skills. Hero skills are skills unique to that character, and generic skills are things that every character gets. It's just a matter of the order of which you, not the order, but just unlocking them and when you want to do it. Now, when I say skills, I'm not saying like you get brand new abilities or anything like that, but you generally get like various trait enhancements, like your attack power go up, or you might provide a different benefit and support skills to, you know, adjacent units, stuff like that. Whereas generic skills are going to be things like, the first one will be, you know, get 2% hit points or 4% hit points back at the end of a turn if your hit points are below 50%. Now, these are trees in the sense that you cannot unlock the next set of skills, which, for the record, it'll only ever be a choice between one or two at a time. But you can't unlock the next set of skills until you've completely maxed out the previous one. So if the skill says zero out of three, you can't say put one skill point in there, unlock the next set of skills, and just go outward. No, you have to unlock, put all three into that, get to 3 out of 3, and then the next skills will be available to purchase. So you will literally be going from left to right. I mean, that annoyed me a little bit, but it is what it is, I guess. Generally, when you have a skill tree, you want to just unlock the skills and then buff up the specific ones you like more than others. But why they made this choice, I have no idea. But that's on them. Rise Eterna, baby. And basically, that's really... Oh, the last thing, too, I meant to mention. Aside from the craftable items that you can find, you can occasionally find gems lying around on the ground or in treasure chests. Gems are essentially the equipable of this game, because you can't get armor and you can't get shields or weapons or whatever. So I guess one positive when compared to Fire Emblem, at least, is that you don't have to worry about your weapon running out of durability and breaking on you. So there you go, guys. I gave you one. But the gems in this game, the way they work, they're your stat augmenters, essentially. So, for example, you might come across a gem that's called the Flawed Sapphire Defense, spelled with a C. When you pick that up and equip it to your character, they'll lose one attack point and they'll gain one defense point. And they go up in quality as you find better ones. So you might find a flawed gem or a good gem. The good gem, for example, will give you a full, like a decent stat bump. Like this one, the good Topaz of Agility gives you 6 agility with no detriments. So you'll find these gems. You can equip them on your characters. Each character can equip up to 7 gems. Some of the slots are unlocked by default, and others you have to unlock by way of that skill tree I mentioned before. If you find a gem you don't want to use, you can always, you know, deconstruct it for a resource. What that resource will be, hell if I know. It's random. Shark! But at least it's a way to get rid of gems you don't want, since there's no stores. It's not like you can sell them or anything. And that's generally the game. So it's funny in that sense that my main gripes with the game are that, what I mentioned earlier about how items work, because if you don't have the right items together to build what you want or need, like a chest key, door key, or potion, those are the primaries. Everything else is just like stat buffs and crap like that. But if you don't have the means to do that, you're going to have to go back to old stages and get and like resource farm just to get the stuff you need to build the items you want. That's an annoying thing to me. The other annoying thing to me is the music, in that the music is like that battle music is the same every single stage. Yeah, I can hear it in my head right now. It starts out sounding okay and never becomes bad, but you know how it goes when your music doesn't have any, you have no variety in your music, it just gets old. You know? Like, you'll end up turning it down eventually because you'll get tired of hearing it. You could have put at least one more stage track in the game, guys. Come on. But so you got those two things. And aside from that, though, I was okay with playing around with it. Like, I did find myself wanting to play more of it. It wasn't like I sat there, I was like, you know, I'm tired, I'm done, this game's stupid. No, it it works. The character units have decent mobility, so you'll make decent progress moving across the field. Your archer has decent range right from the start, almost broken range, really. It's like 5 range of attack for an archer. So you'll be able to do things with your party members, too. And the story isn't anything to write home about. But at the same time, I wasn't actually just putting it down either. The dialogue can stand to get some use, some updates. So, like, the main characters, until they perform their eventual bond, they would have these dialogue scenes where they were just, like, arguing back and forth. More particularly, the woman was arguing with the guy, calling him stupid or I'll kill you, blah, blah, blah. And he was like, man, kids these days. I'm just, like, reading these dialogue strings where I'm like, this gets old. I get it. You don't like him for reasons that make no sense. They make sense at the beginning of the game. They explain it, but it just felt like after the first or second battle, I'm like, Jesus, would you shut up? The dude's rolling with you. Just hang with him. Relax. But I digress. But those things aside, what is the price of this game? Because I didn't know when I got it.
It's like I didn't say it at the beginning of the review, Purnell. Come on. 20.
Come on.
Rise like Eterna, $19.99. What do you think of this one?
I feel like it's a try. But if you haven't exhausted other options for the tactical RPG element on the system and money's no object to you, I'd say definitely make sure to tap in like a 3 houses or something first. But if you hit the guys that you expected to hit and you want to try something new just to, you know, wet your whistle until the next big guy comes along, I think this is a decent try. I mean, it's good. It's just you're not going to sing his praises or anything when you're done.
Yeah. All right, well, next up is a 2-pack of games from Zetalon, Butterfly and Butterfly 2, developed by Grin Robot, published by Zetalon, released May 12th on Windows 10 for $4.99 each. Puzzle platformer game with an interesting gimmick. You can't jump, so you need to bounce off your enemies or use tubes to your advantage. Both platformer skills and logic are required to complete the challenging levels. Deft fingers and quick reactions are required. Sweaty neck guaranteed. Bonus points for using the word deft. That's a minus.
Bonus points for me?
Yeah.
Do I get bonus points?
Sure.
Okay, well, Butterfly and Butterfly 2 are some very deft games. See, I can... like Joshua Goodpaster, I can just use a word on command.
Yes. That's a unique skill.
Uniquely deft.
Yes. Well, Butterfly is a unique game that... offers you an experience full of worms, flowers, and bees, and more. I can't do it. So, all right. So basically, what these are is you play as a caterpillar who's trying to become a butterfly, and yes, you cannot jump. It's a one screen kind of puzzle platformer. It's one of those where you basically, like, there's flowers that you have to gather in every stage, and as soon as you gather the last flower, the stage is over, and you get your 100 points until stage 10, where you get your full 1,000. So there's your gamer score review. And basically, yes, so platforms might be above you, or, you know, you get down to, like, one area, you won't be able to get back up unless you bounce on enemy heads. And in the first game, that is mostly bees. This caterpillar is very... I'm not sure how many lives of bees are worth one butterfly, but, man, you sure kill a lot of bees in this game. I actually felt kind of bad.
You know, like, bee murder.
Yeah, I'm going to load up Bee Simulator or something like that.
Aggressive. B-E-E. Aggressive.
Anyways. But yeah, like, that's basically it. I mean, you know, it's got things like on top of the bees, you've got, like, some stages will have pipeworks. The pipes are very suspiciously Mario-like. And, of course, if you go into them, that can get you up to an upper part of the level. But it's basically, yeah, you start, there's no timer or anything, so as soon as you start the stage, you just look around and you're like, okay, how am I going to get all these? Okay, this, and this, and then you plan it out, and then you know, try to execute. Controls are nice and sharp. I like that. They're very deft. because you're going to have to do a lot of, like, especially in the later stages. Yes, I did play past stage 10. You do have to, like, do some very controlled bounces, you know, off of, like, those bees and stuff. Like, and, you know, you kind of have to know where their hitbox is, because if you, there's some jumps that you kind of have to, like, go off the side of the bee. But if it's, like, just one pixel too short, then, you know, you get killed and then you have to start the stage over again, which is fine because that's, you know, they're very short stages, so that's not a big problem. And, you know, that's really, besides the directional pad, like, the only other button is hitting the, well, it reads my, like, I use a PlayStation controller, but it reads it as an Xbox controller. Mm. And so I'm not exactly sure what button. I think it's Y. Y is on the top, right?
Yeah.
Okay, that button resets the level. That's all the controls there are. So, it looks pretty nice. Like, it's unpolished for sure. Like, it does look like somebody, you know, could have whipped it up in, like, Mario Paint or something. But it does its job, and it is fun, and I do like playing it.
Well, the games are $4.99 each. There are two of them releasing on Windows 10. The first game is also available on Xbox One as well. What are your thoughts on this Butterfly series?
I think it's good. The second game, I actually didn't even go into. It adds in, like, different things like question blocks and exclamation point blocks and different kinds of enemies. Like, the second game is much more fleshed out than the first game. Not sure how much more deft it is, but and it has the same 100 points per stage gamer score thing. But actually, you know, I kind of like going back to the first one, like the simplistic nature of it kind of drew me in. But the second game is more complex. Honestly, I like them both. And they use the exact same assets. So it's an identical game apart from a few of the extra things that are in it. I'd say that they are worth it. But, you know, especially if you're hunting those gamer scores.
Yeah.
But, but, you know, like, I wouldn't go in expecting, like, you know, top tier, like, you know, quality or anything like that. But they're fun and they're clever. And that's all I wanted out of them. So I like them.
Sometimes that's all you need. That's what I like with these games from Xelon. They're cheap. They're quick. They're easy. They're fun to pick up and play.
They're efficient.
They're deft games.
So deft.
All right. One final game to talk about tonight is called Number One Anagrams, developed and published by Eclipse Games. It's releasing May 14th on the Switch for $3.99. Will also be 25% off for the first 10 days, so you could get it for $2.99. Do you enjoy crosswords or word games? Uncover hidden words, connect the letters, interpret the clues, improve your vocabulary, try your memory, challenge yourself, and test your English skills. Everyone check this one out. Cole, how about you start?
I get to start?
Yep.
There are 200 levels in this game, and the premise is basically just, here's some letters, make as many words as you can. There is a crossword on the right side, and basically if you fill in all the words on the crossword, then you're done with the level, right?
Yep.
And you just get points. You can guess shit that's not on the crossword, you get points for it, but your goal is to fill in the crossword. Number One and I were playing, and we were so proud of ourselves. We were, like, blowing through the initial first 20 or so levels. We were like, ah, this is so ridiculous. I'm beating these levels in, like, 10, 15 seconds. And she goes, we should see how many there are. And I said, yeah, we should. And that's when we discovered there were 200. We went all the way to the end. And I go, oh, they're unlocked. You can just play them in any order you want. And she goes, we should try the hardest one. And I was like, sure, because we're beating them in 15 seconds. What the fuck do we care? Right? We load up the hardest one. 57 minutes later.
Oh.
We beat it.
57. Sinister.
I was traumatized and immediately went back to level 8.
Yep, there is a story mode with 200 crosswords, as you said. There are also random infinite crosswords that you can do, and a daily anagram where there's a new one every day.
Yeah, I did the daily one, and it actually took quite a while. I really, I like how it's story mode, but it's just, here's a stack of levels, and it's just called Chapter 1. Like, there's no story to the anagram game. Not
story to the story levels.
There may be one that you have to, like, you know, write out yourself using the same 8 letters.
Storm Boss, a unique and pleasant experience with this chapter.
Yeah, it's a pretty straightforward, simple idea of a game. It's not hard to explain. Once you get into it, you know what you're doing. There's a lot of content here.
It's like a Pauggy game, but with color.
No puns.
Yeah, and yeah, no puns.
Except that which you write yourself.
Which I was doing. I was making so many shitty puns, and number one was like, I'm not going to help you anymore if you keep doing this. And I was like, no, please don't leave me alone with the Switch. I don't know how to turn it off.
So there's an idea for Eclipse. Put a terrible pun after you complete every stage like the team at Lightwood Games does with Pauggy releases.
Did everybody play with the controller or the touchscreen?
I played with the touchscreen and I did not like. Normally with these games too, I'm like, oh, this is so much better with the touchscreen because you can just touch the letters. But where you have to like draw the lines to them, as easy. And it was playing on the tiny screens with that's a bitch. So I just preferred to play with the controller.
Yeah. I actually did like the touchscreen better.
Really? I have fat fingers. Maybe that's my problem.
I have pretty bad fingers too.
But
guys, we all have fat fingers.
Fernell, did you get all any time with the game?
I haven't been playing it for much of the episode. The game is good. The only thing I dislike about it, and I guess it's not really a negative for the game proper, just a thing worth noting, is that I always hate when games do this where they have the time, and the time factors into your score, because of course anybody who has access to that is going to end up just remembering the words they chose, redoing the stage, and getting like a 10-second time on it with the full combo for the words. Like, oh, look, I'm really smart. Guys, catch me. But aside from dealing with that nonsense, the game concept is great. I've been a big fan of anagrams for a while now, though. So, funny, I've learned about by way of the Simpsons episode. You know, take the letters and mix them up and spell something new. Shite. Shit. I don't know. But, I mean, from a game perspective, it's nifty, and it's a good way to kind of just like relax and kill some time, because you're not going to beat all these levels for a long, long, long time. And if you do beat them that quickly, why the fuck are you playing this and not in Mensa? Because this game is not easy at all. Like it builds up, and then once it hits that point, you're like, well, shit, I got my money's worth. I like these things, and I'm losing. So there you go.
All right,
the funny part was that the level that I had the hardest time on was the one where the main word was couches. Just seeing all the C's and nothing else, and I was like, I don't know what to do with these letters. And I spent forever on couches.
Proud of you.
Yeah. Like, magnificent? Nothing. Got it immediately. Couches? Don't know what you're talking about. What's a couch?
Yeah, I'm like that too. Certain letters I can arrange all day, but then like, you throw in something like that I'm not used to, and I just can't do anything.
What the fuck? Words have 2 C's. Why does this exist?
The same way with Scrabble.
That's actually the worst thing that does happen when you finally get the words. Like, how did I not get that word? I know words. I've seen that word. I just said that word 2 minutes ago. And yet it just eludes you.
Well, $4. What do you people think of it?
I thought it was great. I give it a buy it.
Yeah, it's real good.
Yub tie.
Yub is not a word. Yub. You lose your score.
any feedback for Eclipse Games? Because I know they're listening. They're an awesome team. Big thanks to Eclipse for sending the codes over for us to check out. Any feedback for them?
The only thing I can think of right off the top of my head is just that using the controller, even though I thought it was better than using the touch, it was not always as responsive as it could have been. Like, there were times where I definitely would click a letter and I'd go on, spell the rest of the word, and I'd look back and the one letter would not be there. And I'd be like, that is some bullshit. That's just the thing that happens, though. Like, it's not the end of the world. You can just back up and undo it. But that was the only thing that I could really think of to even bitch about.
I'm not sure if it'll actually matter in the grand scheme of this, because I'm sure people who want to cheat are going to find a way to cheat. But maybe have a way to save for future games, like save your first time completion, and that stays in there for good. And then any subsequent one, that'll become like a new one. Like, your first time doing it, it took you this long. Well, on a revisit, you beat it at this date and time, and here's the score you got for it. I don't know. I'm that guy where I'm always trying to find ways to, like, make it so it's impossible to cheat. And I say this as a guy that knows if I'm ashamed of my score, I'm going to cheat to get a better one in there. So just, you know, make it so that it maintains what you did when you first did the level, as opposed to, you know, just overriding it and just having this, like, obscenely impossible score as your score for a stage.
Chris, anything?
I guess make the word wheel bigger.
Yeah.
I mean, and you're putting it on the list.
Put more letters on it.
And also, yeah. Also, maybe make an option to have, for people who are going to play it on touchscreen, because I really feel like this is a touchscreen game. I mean, I played it in bed mostly. You know, make an option where you can put the wheel on the left or right side of the screen so that when you're reaching over to touch the word wheel, you don't block the entire screen.
That's a smart idea.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's all I want. Everything else is good.
What about an elephant?
E-L-E. Yeah. Can't do an elephant. Sorry.
That's not enough slots. Shoot.
Y'all are crazy. That is it for this episode. Made it through another one. Thanks to all y'all for being here and hanging out and keeping us company. Anyone have any final words?
Jeremy's iron.
What?
Chris got it.
I'm worried about you.